to reach, everything there appeared the same as in this divine Mathura Mandala of the material world. Commentary. Gopukumar had long desired to attain Goloka, the land where his worshipable Lord eternally enjoys his pastimes. The Mathura Brahman Gopukumar's disciple lacks the spiritual vision to understand Goloka properly, but to give him some idea of the glories of Goloka, Gopukumar compares it to the transcendental abode where the two of them are presently sitting. That Goloka resembles the earthly Gokula. That Goloka resembles the earthly Gokula explains why the mood of reverence for God's supremacy is absent in the Vaikuntha realm Goloka, which is instead endowed with the priceless treasure of super excellent prema. Coming to Mathura city, in that original land of Mathura, I was surprised and happy to see that it was so similar to the Mathura city here on earth. There I heard that Kamsa, having taken it upon himself to arrest Krishna's parents, Devaki and Vasudeva, was ruling the kingdom. This is in Goloka. Commentary. Kamsa needs no introduction, especially to those who hail from Mathura city. The Brahmana, that's what he's explaining this to Jana Sharma, who is a Mathura Brahmin. The Brahmana, therefore, must have at least read about him in the Puranas and other scriptures. Later on in this narration, we will discover how persons like wicked Kamsa, who in the material world died long ago, can still be active in Sri Goloka. Stay tuned. Gopukumar continues narrating to the Brahmin. Out of fear of Kamsa, whose family and friends were enemies of the demigods, the Yadavas dared not enjoy themselves freely. On account of him, they constantly suffered all sorts of disturbances. Some of them escaped elsewhere, and others took shelter of him. Who's one who took shelter of him? From the Yadu dynasty. Huh? Akura. Yeah. I was also afraid of Kamsa. Therefore, as soon as I finished bathing at Vishranti Ghat, I hurriedly left Mathura and went to Srimad Vrindavan. In that region, inaccessible to all the demigods, rulers of planets, and personal associates of the Supreme Lord, I saw that life was going on just as it goes on in this Aryavrata country within Bharatvarsha on this earth. Most wonderfully, in the sky, the sun was rising every day, and other natural events were occurring just like on the earth. And on the ground, people were speaking the same language and behaving in the same way as here. Stunned by extreme, overflowing astonishment, I was immersed in an ocean of ecstatic rasa. Commentary. Gopukumar is preparing his student to understand descriptions of life in Goloka. Here he gives him a glimpse of how Goloka resembles Boma Vrindavan. Actually, the other way around. Demigods like Surya and Chandra, planetary rulers like Indra and Brahma, and associates of the Lord, of Lord Narayan like Sri Garuda, cannot enter Goloka. Gopakumara saw for himself that the environment and culture of Goloka is just like that of Aryavarta, the civilized portion of central northern India, where Brajabhumi is located. When he saw in the sky and on the ground, what he saw could hardly be distinguished from the common phenomena of life on the earth. This sight amazed him. He could not perceive the spiritual reality. He could now perceive the spiritual reality of rasa as something tangible. And the ecstasy of that rasa at once filled and overflowed his heart and left him swimming in the ocean of the nectar of devotion. Gopakumara continues, after a few moments, I saw some men who might have been cowherds. In a moment he's going to see Krishna. So sit on the edge of your seats here. So it's getting warmed up for seeing Krishna. After a few moments I saw some men who might have been cowherds. They were wandering in the forest along with some elderly ladies, also dressed as cowherds, who were picking flowers. Commentary. Gopakumara characterizes the men he saw as Gopaniva, or as if cowherds. They certainly could not be ordinary cowherds of the material world. Neither could he assume the old women he saw to be exactly what they appeared to be. They were dressed as coward women. But what they actually were, Gopakumara leaves for his student to find out later. The younger gopis were not there picking flowers, either because their feelings of separation from Krishna disabled them from such useful service, or else because they were not allowed to leave the cowherd village. In any case, Gopakumara saw clearly that even the old people of Goloka had a very special love for the Supreme Lord. He continues, the people there were different from anyone I had ever seen before. It was as if some person had stolen the wealth of their hearts and left them helplessly in love with him. Commentary. Since the beauty and good character of Goloka's people was not to be found anywhere else, Gopakumara was unable to think of any metaphors that could identify them by comparing them with others. They seemed distracted, as if someone had stolen their hearts, the actual cause of the strange behavior being that they suffered from some divine madness. They seemed very upset because a thief had stolen the treasure of their hearts, or at least that was how the situation appeared on the surface. Since Gopakumara had just been introduced to life in Goloka, he preferred to withhold his final judgment. Gopakumara continues, simply by seeing them, I felt the same kind of loving affection. With great endeavor, I composed myself and respectfully asked them the following questions. Oh, you who are served by an abundance of happiness which topmost sages cannot obtain even in a dream, you who are reservoirs of the Goddess of Fortune's husbands, Goddess of Fortune's husband's mercy, for which his loving devotees are always praying. Please, please, look with kindness upon this most wretched person who has come to you for shelter. Tell me, who is the king of this region? Where is his residence? Which road leads there? Dear, dear sirs, you are most fortunate. Please be merciful to me, who with mournful cries am inquiring from you. Please, give me, if only by gesture, some answer. Oh, faithful devotees. Commentary. Not receiving an answer, Gopakumara first guesses that perhaps these Gopavasis are deaf. Therefore repeats his address more distinctly, saying loudly, Bho, bho. dear sirs, dear sirs. Then he realizes that they are not deaf, but are simply not paying attention to him. So he tries to impress upon them the sincerity of his request. He praises them as Danya, most fortunate, and Subrata, faithful followers of regulative principles. And if they are following a vow of silence, then at least they can gesture by hand signals. Gopakumar continues, oh, please, hear the words of this tormented soul. Alas, you must be under the spell of that clever cheat. Commentary. Even after Gopakumar's fervent plea, the Goloka Vasis did not respond. They did not even look at him. Gopakumar, rather than becoming angry with them for neglecting him, however, placed the blame on Krishna, who after all is enchanting and has deceived Gopakumar just as he has them. Krishna is indeed the most expert cheat. No one else but he, Tasyaiva, could bewilder them like this. Gopakumar continues, in this way I moved here and there, anxiously questioning each person I met. As I made my way forward, I came to the pasturing grounds of the cowherds. Looking around in all directions, I spotted in the distance a town adorned with the essence of all sweetness. On one side of that town, I heard everywhere wonderful songs being sung by cowherd women, accompanied by the jingling of bangles and the charming sounds of butter being churned, bringing my heart, which was agitated from joy, under control. I walked towards that place and came across an elderly gentleman seated there. He was sobbing profusely and incessantly chanting, Krishna, Krishna. With some skillful effort, I made him speak. I heard him say in a choked voice that this town belonged to the king of the cowherds, Nanda, Sri Krishna's father. Getting closer. As soon as I heard these words, the force of my joy caused me to faint. In a moment, that same compassionate old man revived me. Running ahead, I approached and sat down in a gateway of the town. There I saw, by the hundreds of thousands and tens of millions, many kinds of amazing things, unseen, unheard of, unimaginable by anyone in this world. Commentary. Gopakumar cannot say much about the wonders he saw to someone like the Mathura Brahman, who has not seen anything comparable. But being kindly disposed towards his disciple, he will try to help him understand something. Gopakumar continues, oh, best of the Brahmanas, there I was, unable to discern whether the people were all enjoying the highest bliss or suffering in the grip of terrible misery. I heard the gopi songs accompanied by crying, but I could not tell whether they were expressing the extreme limit of happiness or sorrow. Observing that place, a person might think that he was in the material world, but if he were to carefully compare what he was seeing with his own past experiences, he would understand that he was now somewhere above all material planets, all higher non-planetary regions, and all transcendental abodes of the spiritual world. There, an elderly lady arrived, but then I bowed down to her and asked in a very plaintive voice where Nanda Nandana was playing today. Remember, he appears like a cowherd boy. He has this eternal feature of him. He doesn't age, he just keeps staying a little cowherd boy. The elderly lady said, this morning the bestower of life to us, Vrajavasis, went into the dense forest to play along with his cows, friends, and his respected elder brother. Later on, at dusk, he will return. commentary. This old gopi anticipates that when Krishna returns home, samayasyati, he will very expertly fulfill each Vrajavasi's life's desires. And paraphrasing. And if he does not come home on time, we will all die from disappointment. The lady continued, all the Vrajavasis are waiting, eyes fixed on this path along the Jamuna. These trees stand with their leaves erect in eagerness to see him. Surely he will come along this path. Commentary, discussing Krishna's imminent return has obviously enthused the elderly gopi. Sri Gopal Kumar said, as if anointed by a downpour of purest nectar, I stared with one point of attention down the path the old lady had pointed out. By the sheer force of the highest ecstasy, my thighs seemed frozen. But with some effort, I was able to move further on, where I heard from a distance an inexplicable sound. Guess what the sound is? Krishna is playing his flute. Along with the sound of the mooing cows, I heard the most attractive murmur of Krishna's enchanting flute. That sound, enchanted by sportingly played notes and sweet melodies, decorated with diverse musical embellishments, was like nothing I've ever heard before in the material world. Its attractive force at once overwhelmed everyone present in the cowherd village. Commentary. The first sounds of Krishna's flute that Gopal Kumar heard were sweet, but not very clear. Such indistinct musical sound is called kala. Then Gopal Kumar began to discern the different notes of the scale, followed by coherent melodies like malara rag. And then, as the sound came even closer, he could hear subtle embellishments known as murchana, chromatic modulation. Meditation on that sound was absorbing Gopal Kumar's attention, and indeed, that of everyone present. He continued, by the power of this sound, a downpour of sap flowed from the long rows of trees. A flood of tears fell from the eyes of every embodied being in the village of the cowherds. A shower of milk rained from the breast of all of Krishna's mothers, and even those who were elderly. And the rapid currents of the Jamuna suddenly stood still. Commentary. As the living beings in the forest had all enjoyed Krishna's association during the day, so now, in the evening, everyone who lived in the village was again delighted to see him. Not only Mother Yashoda, but many other mothers of Krishna, including his aunts and nurses, reacted ecstatically to the sound that promised his return. In fact, all the mothers of the cowherd, boys and calves, had become Krishna's mothers when Krishna had expanded himself to replace the boys and calves stolen by Brahma. Normally, nothing can stop Sri Jamuna's irrepressible current, but the sound of Krishna's flute is no ordinary force, Gopal Kumar continues. I did not know whether this flute emitted poison or the nectar of immortality. I could not tell whether the sound it produced was harsh like thunder or soft like water, nor whether it was hotter than the blazing fire or cooler than the moon. Due to that sound, all the Vrajavasis, driven to insanity, fainted. Then, I saw some women of Vraj come out of their houses, carrying in their hands the things needed for greeting him with worship. Others passed by, carrying on their heads ornaments and offerings of food. Other ladies, ignoring everything around them, ran towards the sound of the cows mooing, mixed with the song of the flute. Weakened by the obstacle of the frenzy of their love for Krishna, they stumbled down the path. Commentary: nothing but their own eagerness, which was evidence of how purely they loved Krishna, could interfere with these gopis' attempts to run forward. Some ladies ran with their ornaments and Some ladies ran with their ornaments in disarray. Some could hardly keep their belts and bodices tied. Some remained in their houses stunned like trees, and others fell unconscious to the ground. Some of the women who had fainted, their faces wet with tears and saliva, were being carried by their girlfriends. Other ladies went ahead. Commentary: the gopis had no need to specify to anyone who the object of their attraction was. They simply referred to Krishna as Tum Etam, this one. Without any explicit description, they all knew whom they were talking about: Krishna, the Lord of their lives. He continues, totally absorbed in singing his names and activities, adorned with diverse ornaments, dress, and complexions, they dismissed the goddess Rama's pride in her own good fortune. Swiftly they ran to take shelter for the bank of the river Jamuna. I also went forward as if being pulled by someone, joining the throng of gopis rushing on all sides. I also began to run very quickly. Then from a distance I saw him, his charming flute in hand, running quickly. He came out from the group of his friends and animals and approached me, saying in a sweet voice, "Look, Sridham, here is my dear friend, Sarup, the sun shining on the lotus of your family." So that's his spiritual name. Is in his spiritual form, is Sarup. Krishna was dressed for the forest. His garments, earrings, peacock feather crown, and garland of kadamba flowers all swayed to and fro. His fragrance perfumed all directions for a great distance, and his beautiful lotus face bloomed with a playful smile. His lotus eyes beamed with a merciful glance. The varieties of excessive beauty decorating him were unique, as the locks of his hair, adorned with the dust raised by the cows, flew about. The fingers of his lotus hand busily pushed them back. His tender lotus feet touched the surface of the earth, just to grant her the gift of supreme splendor. Those divine feet were supremely attractive, as they playfully danced in their great eagerness to walk quickly with large steps. The effulgence of his body, colored like a rain cloud and shining with the full sweetness of blooming youth, lit up all corners of the sky, capturing the hearts of the ever-dear devotees of Vraj. His beauty was an ocean abounding with countless excellences. Commentary: unable to express much more in words about the beauty of Krishna's body, which glowed like a new rain cloud, Gopakumar sums up his beauty by describing it as an ocean of excellences. As the ocean is constant and unfathomably deep, so are all of Krishna's personal qualities. In Goloka, Krishna's beloved devotees know the value of his beauty and other virtues, because their hearts are completely attracted to him as he is to them. He goes on, compelled by the affection of his helpless devotee, he leapt forward and came close to me. In love, I fainted at seeing him as he caught hold of my neck and fell to the ground. Commentary: Gopakumar was already aware, at least theoretically, that Krishna is very affectionate to his helpless devotees. But now he learned that Krishna had affection specifically for him. Merely seeing Krishna was enough to totally enchant Gopal Kumar, but this new discovery pushed him toward the limit of ecstasy. Gopal Kumar continues, explaining to Jana Sharma. A moment later I regained consciousness and carefully freed my neck from his grasp. I stood up and saw him, and I fainted to the ground. Covered with dust, he was moistening the path. Krishna had fallen unconscious to the ground and was crying profusely that Gopal Kumar had returned to the spiritual world. Some gopis came there and said, "Look, who has come here? What has he done? He has put our life and soul into this condition. Alas, alas, just see, people of Braj. Now we are all dead." They saw this boy, Gopal Kumar, now being called Sarup, and they had never seen him before, and here's Krishna lying on the ground unconscious, and so they're analyzing what's the cause. This must be some servant of that wizard Kamsa. In various ways the gopis lamented as they surrounded Krishna and loudly cried in great distress. Several groups of cowherds quickly approached from behind Krishna. Seeing him in such a state, they cried with pitiful voices. From far away in the village, Nanda and the other elder cowherds, along with Yashoda, who was so affectionate to her son, and other older ladies and maidservants, heard this terrible moaning sound. Together they all ran to that place, their feet stumbling on the path, bewildered. They cried, "Alas! Alas!" Then the cows, bulls, calves, black deer, and other animals also came there. Seeing Krishna in that condition, they cried in agony. The animals' faces were drenched with floods of tears, and out of love, they were all bellowing. One by one, they approached Krishna and gently smelled and licked him again and again. Flying overhead, great numbers of birds also expressed their misery by making tumultuous noise that sounded like people crying. The immobile creatures were also greatly pained within and seemed to suddenly dry up. What more is there to say? All beings, moving and non-moving, were on the verge of death. I was drowned in a vast ocean of sorrow, confused about what to do. I felt severely tormented. I put Krishna's feet on my head, and sobbing in various ways, I began to lament. Commentary: putting Krishna's feet on his head gave Gopal Kumar a good opportunity to see how beautiful, soft, and attractive his feet were. I'll just read a little bit further. Pretty hard to stop. Then, Lord Balabhadra, who at that time was some distance away, quickly arrived there, full of fear. Charming, white complexioned, and arrayed in blue garments, he appeared as nicely dressed and the same age as Krishna. After crying for a moment, that most skillful of persons seemed to regain his composure and looked all around. With great care and attention, he made me hold his younger brother's neck in my arms. Commentary: at first Balaram also cried in distress to see Krishna in such a condition. He quickly gathered his wits, however, and looked all around to find out what had made Krishna faint. With my hand, he wiped clean Krishna's beautiful limbs, and he loudly called out to him with various plaintive cries. Then he made me lift Krishna up from the ground. Suddenly Krishna opened his eyes, which had been sealed by a flood of tears. Seeing me, he joyfully embraced and kissed me, but then he looked around and became embarrassed. Commentary: Krishna was embarrassed by the thought that everybody could see from his tearful reaction of Gopakumar's arrival that he had become helplessly bewildered by love for his friend. Then, taking my hand in his own left hand, he received me as a long-lost bosom friend. That best of the lords asked me various questions, and then, greeting all the people of Braj, entered the best of the cowherd villages with the gait of an elephant. The forest animals were miserable because now they had to be separated from him. They were unable to go anywhere without him. They simply stood at the entrance of the village, ready to spend the entire night there in the hope of again seeing their lord the next morning. The birds flew here and there, high over the village, to watch him. But when night came, they could no longer see him, and they cried out as if weeping and flew away. At the insistence of Nanda Maharaj, who was anxious in love for his sons, the two brothers went to their home just after milking the cows without even properly looking after them. Commentary. Nanda Maharaj anxiously told Krishna, "My boy, you must be tired from so much wandering in the forest. Come home with your elder brother and take your bath. I will look after the cows, please. Don't delay any longer, or your mother will be unhappy and scold me. Please, cooperate and come right now." Mother Yasoda quickly came to meet them. Out of love, her clothing and body were soaked from the flow of milk from her breasts and the flood of tears from her eyes. Together with Rohini, she repeatedly offered lamps to each of their limbs. She offered arati to their bodies. Performing arati to her son Krishna by caressing him with her own hair, Yashoda affectionately embraced and kissed him. She could not decide whether she should keep Krishna on her head, her chest, or within her womb to protect him. Bewildered by love for me, Krishna brought me there and made me offer respects to his mother. Mother Yashoda, seeing the excessive love Krishna had for me, happily caressed me, just like her own son. Then the gopis arrived there all at once. As you can see, this can go on for some time. It's describing the different rasas, and he takes Sanatana Goswami, or this chapter takes us through the night, and Krishna's getting up in the morning, and what he does in the morning, and when he gets ready for herding the cows, and one by one, the different... This is now the ecstasies of meeting Krishna, and what follows is the anticipation of Krishna's separation. And in one sense, it's Gopakumar's training up of his disciple, this Brahmin, Jana Sharma, how to appreciate the realm of Gokula and the realm of Goloka. And Jana Sharma's position is, he's exalted, but it's something far more comparable to us than Gopakumar's position. He had, well, yes, relatively so. So he's being trained, and the training is the direct disclosures of Gopakumar's experiences of going to Gokul, and then very quickly being taken by Krishna himself to Goloka Vrindavan. The section that I just mentioned yesterday and skipped over reading, I mentioned that there were about 30, 35 verses in a row that are the standard kind of descriptions that we hear of Krishna's pastime, very much like narrations from Krishna book of Brahma Vimohan Leela and descriptions of the Rasa dance. Narada is describing them in a very happy way. And now Gopu Kumar is getting to experience Krishna's association directly. Anyway, Hare Krishna. So any discussion? Yeah.
This is actually a question I've been holding since yesterday's class. You were saying how in the beginning when we're in the soft, pliable stage, that we follow the rules and regulations in order to gain the humility for our consciousness to meet the holy name. And I started to think about that, and I was thinking about discussions I've had with different devotees and how different devotees have different ideas about which rules and regulations are more important or which ones you don't have to follow and still be a devotee. And usually their argument is that either, you know, I'm repressing my emotions or my desires are too strong and why even bother. And when I was thinking about what you were saying, I was thinking, isn't it more a choice of humility than a repression of desires or a repression of emotions or a repression of relationships?
Yeah, the idea with humility is one can take strength from a greater source than one's own capacity. Humility allows for it more than opens the door for descending mercy, but it begs for that descending mercy. The other is the door is shut, and even if somebody's knocking, well, I'm just not going to answer because whatever, I'm busy with my little world. So yeah, okay, to respond to your question, if one can take the position of humility, or at least cultivate the position of humility, strive for that, then that's at least the beginning of going beyond my limitations, going beyond the little, like the cows that are tethered. They can only go so far. They're bound by that rope or chain or whatever it is. So their freedom is very restricted. So one can look at that, and that's like the hard knot of material existence and how it holds one to a very fixed and very narrow position of experience. So, in response to your question, the position of humility allows for someone of greater capacity than one's own self to untie the rope, giving one a newfound freedom. So, although the rope is untied, one is voluntarily submissive to the person who has untied the rope.
By following the circle.
Yeah. by their willful submission. Well, why should I have willful submission? Now I have this newfound freedom. But newfound freedom again, with that sense of lack of humility and lack of submission, again, I'm tethered. Just like that. Maya doesn't wait. One gets tied very quickly again to the binding force of material nature, restricting one. One can't proceed. And then has these different rationales. Oh, what's the use? Etc.
You were recommending this prayer that for this change in consciousness, when we see that we're taking shelter of the false ego, to recognize that, to regret that, and to pray to Krishna that we can do our service with humility.
Yeah, 3-4, in the absence of that.
So I tried that today.
Oh.
It's really hard. Like whenever I found my mind doing that, I tried to regret it and pray, and I can't even count the number of times I had to do it in a day. And my question is...
It takes training.
Yeah, it's really hard. When you don't really feel that much regretful, I feel like you're just kind of saying, okay, I regret it because I know that I'm on the false ego, but it's not like in your heart you don't feel... Oh my God, I regret that so much that I thought that. Mm.
So how to make the heart softer? Well, that question is a little bit like the question where my thoughts are going to is Prabhupada being asked, how do you become sincere? So instead, how can I get to that condition where my heart is softer? Prabhupada's answer to that question was, how do you become a drunkard? By associating with those who drink. Just go hang out at an establishment where people drink all the time. Just go and hang out there and you'll become like that. How does one become scholarly? You go to a place where scholarly people spend their time and you associate with them in ways that they associate with one another. In due course of time, if that's your desire, you can become like that. Similar, associating with people who are very sincere, or by associating with people who are, by their very quality, they are practiced to feeling very deeply these very feelings of movement from the material position of, like our Dengakasura story, persons who are in the very, very common, prevalent, practically all-pervasive, ubiquitous modality of mudha, this hard-working meaning, I must bury the burden, I must bear the burden of producing results, because otherwise, what else is there? Then there's nothing. So I have to do that, like the donkey. I must carry this load, because otherwise I won't get the grass at the end of the day, although there's everywhere. But I'm donkey. You just keep carrying that load. So those persons whose hearts are free from the material mentality of false ego, the material world is made up of people who are, and it's everywhere, the mentality of false ego. So that's like, this other is just an anomaly. Where does it fit in? Where does the person who's free from false ego fit in with the whole world of people filled with false ego? It's just, but there are such people, and one should find such people and associate with such people to develop that quality. They can actually leave behind their false ego. So, hankering, even if one isn't, if that association is not, you know, so readily available, hankering for that association, like the question you asked yesterday, about even if, what if we don't actually do something, we just make that shift of consciousness. Yeah. Hankering for such association. And practicing doing the same. But if the mind can be reshaped, the mind can be cleansed and purified from that which it's very strongly habituated to, by constant practice. Two things. Constant, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, constant practice and detachment, which means spiritual attachment.